This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Ange Barry. Ange is our CEO of Joy. Our next guest is Mark Dreyfus, the ALP Federal Member for Isaacs in Victoria, Shadow Attorney General, and a very strong and consistent advocate for our community and for freedom. Ange.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Morning, Ange. Morning, Macca. Thanks for the introduction.
Yeah, lovely, lovely to welcome you to the show. You may have heard our conversation just before we were chatting a little bit about the bench and diversity in general. We're really interested to understand, I guess, your opinion and your thoughts on representation in the judiciary and the diversity of that representation. It's a bit of a hot topic for us here in Joy, having a few off-air discussions. And, I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on that one.
The judiciary should be reflective of our community. That's the way I've always put it. It doesn't have to be representative in a numerical sense, but when people look at our judiciary, they should be able to see the community that they live in, and that means that we should be having gay and lesbian judges. It means we should be having more women on the bench. It means we should be having people with more diverse ethnic backgrounds. I like to think that when I was Attorney General, I kept to that. And I've been pretty disappointed over the last 6 years at a federal level in that we've gone away from the really from making an effort to have a reflective judiciary back to what I call a black box system, where the two Liberal Attorneys General over the last 6 years use a black box system. You can't tell how they're choosing. There's no way of applying for a job on the judiciary. You should have an application system. I think you should have a pretty rigorous interviewing system. And I think that the government needs to pay attention to diversity.
You've probably answered my second question there, Mark, which was about how judges are appointed. How do you think we get around the need to balance wisdom, which is absolutely essential when making judgment in that legal sphere, with the ability to stay in touch with current issues of society, current issues of the day? And I'm reflecting on my own personal experience of visiting courts and seeing predominantly more senior members of our community, perhaps in their late 60s, early 70s, sitting on the bench. So how do we get that balance?
Judges do serve a long time. They retire in Victoria at 72. At the federal level, they retire at 70. So you are going to see older people, because often they will have been appointed in their 40s or 50s, and they serve a long time. I don't know that there's an answer to that. I think that being a judge is a tough job, and we look for wisdom, you're right. We hope that judges will learn as they become more experienced to stay in touch, to be reflective of community opinion, to be empathetic. And the overwhelming majority of Australian judges, state and federal, are just that. But it's difficult. And, of course, what comes to public attention are judges that aren't passing muster, judges that aren't quite keeping in touch. I don't have an answer. I think this is a problem as old as the hills, that you try to appoint the right people to be judges. Mostly they turn out pretty well. Every now and again you'll get one or two that aren't so good.
Thanks for that, Mark. Now, there's a couple of issues that one of press freedom that an independent media and the protection of an independent media, no surprise, we here at Joy have a very particular view on that. And also the religious discrimination legislation. Now, the government seems to me to have a pretty non-inclusive, almost hilarious view on press freedom. Give us your thoughts on that first, and then we'll actually cover, you know, the your colleague across the aisle, Christian Porter, the Attorney General, and the religious discrimination legislation. But press freedom, let's briefly touch on that and independent media.
Well, I think what's prompted the big current discussion about press freedom is the shocking sight of police raiding journalists for doing their job, which we had barely 2 weeks after the election. We had a raid on the home of a News Limited journalist, Annika Smethurst, and we then, the next day, had a raid on the headquarters of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. We've had platitudes from Morrison ever since, but he says he believes in freedom of the press. And I've got to say, I don't see that in action. He called, I think as a bit of a sop, he called an inquiry of the Intelligence Committee, which actually was sitting in Canberra yesterday for our third day of hearings. And the position the government's taken before that inquiry is that there doesn't need to be any change. Well, I think anyone looking on would say, obviously, there needs to be some change in the law and there needs to be some change in the way government is approaching this, because it's almost unprecedented that we should have raids on a journalist's home and the headquarters of the ABC on successive days. Leaks have been going on for since Federation, but you can count on one hand the number of journalists in 120 years who've gone to jail, and not always in relation to leaks. Now, what's happened, I think, is what most Australians looking on would say. I want a strong and independent media. I think it's vital to hold governments to account. And I can say, absolutely, Labor is going to fight to defend and strengthen press freedom through this inquiry and in every other way we can.
Interestingly, the I think possibly the only journalist that has gone to jail was as a result, was held in contempt of Parliament, and that attack was led by Sir Robert Menzies.
Yeah, back in 1954.
Yes.
Happily, you'll be pleased to know, Macca, that the Parliament abolished its own right to jail journalists or jail anybody for contempt in 1987, so that can't happen. But much more significantly, we've got the use of the criminal law to attack journalists. We've got three journalists, Annika Smethurst and the two ABC journalists, who are at risk. I asked the Australian Federal Police about this yesterday at the inquiry. They are at risk of being charged and going to court on serious criminal offences. And I think the government should bring that to an end.
Yeah, well, you know, what it says when you bring the force of the law, and particularly the security services, down on the media, there is an ulterior motive. This is not a new playbook. We've seen it in governments right wing, left wing, all around the world. We're not frightened of the Federal Police coming here because they won't stay because we've got such shit coffee.
Right. You've got to worry when the New York Times writes articles following those police raids.
Yes,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can't but help notice the irony, though, that this has happened at a time when the Cambridge Analytica scandal burst onto the scenes in America around the social media, the use of social media by politicians to, I guess, impact the outcomes of elections, democratic elections. It's very interesting to see the converse happening in Australia where media is being targeted. And
it is.
Yes.
Now, Your colleague, and I use the term because I know you, I do enjoy a good relationship with Christian Porter, mostly. He's the Attorney General. You're the shadow, the religious discrimination legislation. Won't come as a surprise to you, Mark, that there's a few clauses in that legislation that cause our community great concern. Give us an update.
Right. About 3 weeks ago, my parliamentary colleague, Christian Porter, the Attorney General, and I do see him as a colleague, and I'm trying to work with him on a range of things, including this, published some exposure drafts of bills. The main bill is a religious discrimination bill, and it follows on 2 years of bitter argument within the Liberal Party, precious little consultation with the community, not not even consultation with most religious groups, and as far as I can see, almost none with LGBTIQ plus groups. Now, he's called for submissions by the 2nd of October, and I'd say straight away, Labor agrees with the core principle in these bills, which is that Labor wants to see Australians able to go about their lives free from discrimination. And the core principle in these bills is to add religious belief as a protected attribute to the existing anti-discrimination laws, which deal with a whole range of other attributes, race, sexual identity, sex, gender, disability, age, and now we're to have at the federal level religious belief to be protected against discrimination. But saying that does not mean in any way that Labor wants to see laws that allow protections from discrimination that are already there for LGBTIQ and other Australians taken away. And that's going to be the core debate in these bills. So I'm sorry if this is sounding a bit complicated, but there's some clauses in these bills that many people have drawn attention to. I think I've had a meeting just about every day since these exposure drafts were released, meetings with the LGBTIQ community, with religious groups, and almost everybody has got criticisms, because I think perhaps you could say that Christian Porter has tried to please everyone and perhaps has pleased nobody. But a lot of it's driven by these arguments in the Liberal Party. That's my read on it. And I'm hoping that everybody who's interested in this will make a submission to the Attorney-General. That's by the 2nd of October. The process after that, as I understand it from the government, is that they're going to consult some more. That's good. And they're going to produce a final version of these bills to come into the Parliament, not necessarily for passage this year, because they'll be sent off, if they are brought into the Parliament in the remaining four sitting weeks, they'll be sent off to a Senate committee for an inquiry. I'd expect them to be debated in the Parliament next year, possibly early next year, but the timing's not in my control, it's in the government's control. Do you want me to keep talking,
Matt? Yeah, no, please, you know, we're interested in the process.
On the clauses that have been drawn attention to, there's some so-called conscientious objection provisions. That's clauses 8.5 and 8.6 of the bill. There's a provision that some people have labelled the Falau provision, which would be a change to the law about employment, and provides in a pretty unusual way, by reference to the turnover of a corporation that employs you.
Oh, yeah, 50 million.
A 50 million threshold, and a lot of people, including the religious groups, have said, we don't understand why your protection from discrimination for your religious belief should depend on how big the company you work for is. And then there's another provision which particularly people in the Tasmanian community have been very concerned about. There's a clause which looks like it overrides a provision of the Tasmanian Anti-Discrimination Act. And it's just to be clear, it's the provision which was the basis for a complaint that was made against the Catholic Bishop of Hobart during the marriage equality campaign.
That, you know, there was a specific commitment made by Christian Porter that this would not override state legislation. Am I right or wrong? He said that, didn't he?
No, he said that, and that's why I was struck by the appearance in these draft bills of that clause, which to me, as a lawyer of some experience, looks like it overrides the Tasmanian Anti-Discrimination Act and the specific provision, what's more, Section 17 of the Tasmanian Anti-Discrimination Act. I'm not adopting a final view here. Labor has not adopted a final view because we're waiting. It might be that it's all wasted effort. If the government doesn't go forward with some of these very contentious clauses, then there's no need to have a debate about them. I'm waiting to see what the final version of the bills introduced to the Parliament is. But again, if I could make clear, Ange and Macca, we are not going to allow protections from discrimination that already exist in the law for LGBTIQ and other Australians to be removed by this legislation.
Can you just repeat that, Mark? I want everyone to hear this.
Well, I've said it.
Yeah.
I will say it again. We are not going to allow protection from discrimination that already exist in the law for LGBTIQ and other Australians to be removed. This is a 40-year project for Labor, going right back to the 1975 Racial Discrimination Act of the Whitlam government, the Sex Discrimination Act of 1984, which I made some amendments to as Attorney General in 2013 when I removed one of the exemptions that used to be in the Sex Discrimination Act as it applied to aged care homes after consultation, as is appropriate, with the religious care organisations. Now, we're not about to see those hard-won protections being removed. And the debate is going to be about how one person's right to be protected from discrimination intersects with others' rights to be protected from discrimination. I think it ought to be possible to get to an appropriate solution. I think just to be clear, I think that the group in the Australian community that will most benefit from the introduction of a protection against discrimination on religious belief is likely to be the Muslim community.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who, on a daily basis, experience the most discrimination in employment, the most discrimination in relation to the provision of services. And that's why I think I can predict, I said I wasn't going to state a position, I think I can reasonably confidently predict that Labor will support a bill that introduces a ground of religious belief to be protected from discrimination. The debate is going to be about what other things the Attorney-General chooses to put in the final form of these bills.
Mark, I'd like to reflect back on the Falau Clause. It's a very interesting area, and I assume that under the definitions in the Act, sporting clubs will be considered to be an employer and fit these definitions that the clause is referring to if they are over the 50 million threshold. Is that correct?
Of course.
Yep. Okay.
But as I say, it's an unusual measure, and it's an unusual distinction to be made. A number of the religious groups have said, why is it that if you work for a small employer, you get less protection than if you work for a larger employer?
Yeah. I think, I guess where I'm going is protection and what is religious freedom, and when do comments such as the Falau comments, blur that whole boundary of protecting freedom versus protecting the impact of those commentary. And I'm wondering, how the value-based system of a sporting organisation or even a company, is impacted by protections around, public expression that, steps right outside, I guess, respectful commentary.
Well, that's the debate we're going to have to have. It's a debate to some extent that we've had in relation to speech in the two attempts that this Liberal government has made over the last 6 years to abolish Section 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act, which is an anti-vilification provision. And the Liberal Party's position has been let it rip, let people say whatever they want to say.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to care about the attack on the dignity of many Australians that's bound up in the use of racist speech. Now, I don't trust the approach that the Liberal Party of Australia takes to these matters. I'm going to be fighting, as I hope I have done throughout my political career, for Australians to treat each other in a respectful manner. A lot of this probably shouldn't require legislation. And I don't think it's too much to ask for everybody to be aware of our mutual frailties, of our differences, to be accepting and to exercise just a little bit of moderation in the way in which we speak. Fighting for the right to express yourself in intemperate tones, to use harsh speech, I'm not sure that that's of great assistance to anything in Australian society.
Mark, thank you for your time. We've spoken to you a little bit longer than probably we all thought, but thank you for that. Thank you always, as always, for your support and your commitment that you've given. I'm sure we're going to be speaking to you again, particularly as this legislation starts to take its final form. And again, people have till the 2nd of October to make a submission to the Federal Attorney General on this legislation. You know, encourage people to do so. It's really important.
Thanks very much, Mac. I'd make the same encouragement. And thank you, Ange.
Thank you, Mark.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.